I'm Joe Partavilla. Welcome back to the Forbes Books Podcast. And back in 2011, Tom Cruise went to the UAE to scale the side of the world's tallest building for one of his Mission Impossible movies. But in 2015, today's guest went to the UAE to launch an English common law system in Abu Dhabi. They both sound equally intimidating. You know Tom Cruise, but today I want to introduce you to Linda Fitzallen. She's the registrar and chief executive of the Abu Dhabi Global Market Courts, where she leads the administration and operations of the court and the delivery of the court's comprehensive digital services and unique e-courts platform. She's here to talk about her journey from Australia to the UAE and the inspiration for her upcoming book that explores the theme of taking chances by telling her own remarkable story. Linda, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Joe. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, Linda. And so folks probably recognize your accent. You're Australian, and you are very much like all the Australians I've ever known in my life, that you can never stay put in one place. Even though Australia may be one of the most beautiful countries in the world, you Aussies can't wait to get out of there. And you're another one of these Aussies who decides to travel the world and work in all these amazing cities. So talk to me about that for you. Like, I know you originally lived in the Sydney area, but then have sprouted all over North America and the Middle East. What is it about you Aussies? The fact that you just can't be, you can't stay there in Australia. You got to get out of there.
Oh, I know, Joe. I think we're just hard coded for travel. So I think we sort of set foot on the island of Australia and all of a sudden it's kind of like, okay, it's an island. What's beyond the island? So we can't help ourselves. It remains the young Australian's rite of passage to after high school, before university, to either take a year off, the gap year, and go travelling, or at some stage do that. But we cannot stay put in Australia. I don't know. It's just something about us. But I do think it's because we feel that we live such a long way away from the rest of the world, and it's so different, and we have no physical borders. That it's really nice to go and travel and sort of get in the mix of the rest of the world. So, and yeah, you're right. I haven't stayed put. It took a little while for me to travel, probably in later life, you know, having worked. But, you know, one of my favorite places in the world, managed to move to New York in 2002. And I lived there with my family. We moved there for my husband's job at the time. So, they're, you know, spectacularly fun, absolutely spectacularly fun. And then 6 years there, back to Australia, kind of change of life in terms of children growing up and going to high school, the only grandchildren. So we went back to Sydney and I didn't last too long there before this tremendous opportunity came up to start up a common law court in Abu Dhabi for its International Financial Center, which is where I am at the moment, in the middle between East and West. So extraordinary location and such an extraordinary neighborhood to live in as well.
Wow. And what you've done there at ADGM Courts is, it's kind of mind-boggling. It's, you guys essentially created a common law court system out of thin air. It's hard for me to, like, one day there's no court system, and now all of a sudden there's an English common law court system. Was it as easy as flipping a switch when it came to doing that?
If only, if only. It was that easy. But I have to say, it was easier than I expected. But there was a court system, so the kind of what we call the local court system, which is civil law, tremendous sort of set of courts. But the and this was based a little bit, but a entirely different platform. Dubai had introduced a common law international financial center in 2004, and Abu Dhabi waited a little while. In fact, it waited 9 years before it decided to set up its own international financial center. You know, the reason for it, just briefly, is because the international trade and commerce works on common law. And so to attract more foreign direct investment into the Emirate of Abu Dhabi, and particularly into the city, which is burgeoning with some of the largest sovereign wealth funds in the world, the idea was to set up this international financial center in order to provide a different system of law for investors, and particularly, you know, very significant commercial investors, global investors, who were used to a common law system. but they interact with each both systems very well. There's fewer differences, I think, than you think. But so I arrived here in 2015 without a courtroom, without any rules, without any regulations, with four judges and a chief justice. But other than that, nothing else that resembled a court.
Wow.
And it was, as I said to my chief justice, I was at the New South Wales Supreme Court before I came here, which is why I was asked to come here, because I'd already been at New South Wales Supreme Court for just on 5 years by that time. And I said, as I said to my former chief justice, who's one of the most terrific people I've ever met, when I announced to him that I was coming, I said, I just don't want to wake up in 5 years' time and wondered what that would have been like. Hmm. That's a little bit of kind of the way I tick, is that it's just better to grab that opportunity and do something. If it doesn't work out, kind of so be it. You know, you make it into something else, or you go back to what you do, or whatever. You know, there's always something that's created from what you do. And so here I am 7 years later, having set it up, and the court working extremely well now, highly digitized. We have massive technology in the court. And yeah, it's just been a tremendous opportunity and really a privilege because of the incredible passion and drive of the leadership of Abu Dhabi to make this into a burgeoning international financial center. And the court is really an integral part of that. So, lucky me, essentially, having had that opportunity is how I look at it.
All right. Well, I have a lot to unpack there. One, the opportunity, but two, you mentioned the technology piece of what you introduced there with ADGM courts. And one of the things that you introduced was e-courts in 2018, which was sort of ahead of its time, literally 2 years before the pandemic, where e-courts was even a thing people would even consider doing in most regions. But what was that like to introduce that idea of being able to just hold court online?
Yeah, fantastic. Like, extraordinary breath of fresh air and really transforming the way a court worked. I'd come from a very busy court where there was a digital system, but not in everything that was done by the court. Whereas when I came here, my chairman at the time had said to me, you've just got to make this different. You've just got to make this. You've got to drive technology through it. And I said, it's just that for me is an incredible passion to do something with greenfields. So, you know, very lucky with greenfields, no legacy of cases. So a bit scary too, not to be seen to squander an extraordinary opportunity to really make something out of it. But yeah, you're right. We created this eCourts platform. So 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, you can file any document you want. We see it most times of the day and night. And everything, we were doing hearings in 2018 because most of the people who use the court are literally not in our demographic. Like, they could be most of them are in London, to be perfectly honest, particularly the lawyers. And so we had to make it so that people anywhere around the world can sit in their office or at their home desk and really transact with the court on their cases. So that's what we created in 2018. And then pandemic arrived, of course, in March 2020, and we seamlessly continued. So we made no changes, which was just fantastic. So while the rest of the world was kind of readjusting and all going online and whatever else, we were like, no, same for us, just totally seamless and uninterrupted. And, you know, the challenge now is for us to do more, which we have created more just recently. But, you know, a technology-driven court is not just about virtual hearings. It's really about everything you do in the justice sector, you know, the way cases are managed, the way the trials are run. Absolutely every aspect of it has to be digitized. Otherwise, you know, you're really not on that kind of transformational piece.
Out of curiosity, in 2020, did all your court friends call you up and be like, hey, Linda, how'd you do that? Because we need to do this now. Were you getting a lot of folks hitting you up for advice?
I had quite a few folks hitting me up for advice, saying, just, you know, give us a bit of an idea how we can at least get this part in or whatever. But yeah, interestingly. So yeah, and some have done bits and pieces of it. So yeah, I did. There were a few phone calls to try to work out how on earth it could be done.
Awesome. And you have such a wonderful life that we've sort of alluded to, and your career path is just bonkers. And it's sort of what led you to your next step in life, and that's writing a book. And you sort of mentioned this line earlier in our conversation, but it's sort of going to be the driver of the book you're working on. And it's, I don't want to wake up in 5 years and wonder what it would have been like. Has that always been part of your ethos of like no regrets and just take chances? Because it sounds like it is, but is that something that developed over time, or is that sort of like a gene you were born with?
I think it's probably developed more over time. I think I was hardwired for that a bit, and my mother used to always say it's better to regret something that you did, provided it wasn't a criminal act, than something that you didn't do. So I was not a massive risk taker. And I don't see it as being a massive risk taker. I just see it as, but you're right, I am like that. And I see it as just never wondering. I've never wanted to wonder what something would have been like. I would prefer to go, well, you know what? That didn't work. Hmm. Okay. All of that thinking, not too much. How can it work? But I've been blessed to have sort of most of those steps, if they haven't been as I thought they would at the start, they've gone on to extraordinarily different things which have worked in a different way. Hmm. So, yeah, probably more sort of later over time that is kind of the way that I've ticked. But it will be, it's, I guess, deep down underneath, I think I always had there. But with the assistance kind of a law degree, which is very portable, and the ability to travel and explore different places, supported, by incredible mentors and friends over the time, I think that, that's been just enormously helpful for me. And has really, I've kind of thrived on that support in order to have the comfort that the decisions you make, leaping off, the ledge to a certain extent, is you're not expecting, a massively hard fall. So, yeah, it's been great. And I will continue to do that. But, and that's what I kind of explore in the book. It's not about, preaching or making a speech about that sort of thing as to that's what you need to do, but rather something that I've found incredibly rewarding during my professional career. Hmm.
And it's something that you call constructive restlessness. And I guess it goes to what you're talking about with your mother and everything like that. It's like, it's okay to take risks as long as, you're not breaking the law. So break that down for me, constructive restlessness.
What it is for me is about, you kind of know in your career when you're in a job, you kind of get to that point where something inside you tells you that you need to be thinking of something else, that you're sort of questioning each day, not kind of actively so that you're racking yourselves about, oh, is this the right job and maybe I need a job? Nothing like that. It's really more, it's kind of more organic. All of a sudden, you sort of start to feel that there might be something else out there that, and you kind of see it in the role that you're in. Something will pique your interest and think, wow, that would be something I could do, or that would be a really great segue. So you get to that, and I call it a restlessness because it's and I call it constructive because it's leading you to opportunities as to plunging you into the depths of the fact that you're somewhere where you don't want to be or shouldn't be or not enjoying. So it's about really trusting your gut and acting on, what's going in inside of you to say, do you know what, maybe there's something else out there. And they're not, going nuts about, all right, I'm going to do this massive career change. That's it. I'm out of here. But just being open to things. So this constructiveness is about looking to what's positive and looking to what may lead to something, gaps and, lights that are sort of there that you think, wow, okay, that's something different. So that's why I call it constructive restlessness, is that there's no negativity about it. It's something that can lead you to want to take opportunities, explore ideas, and really see whether or not there's another adventure that you need to embark upon.
And I joked earlier in the conversation, Linda, about the fact that Aussies by nature are pretty nomadic, and you broke down your sort of timeline of jumping all over the planet. But I want to go back to that decision that when you went back to Australia and you got the call to work in the UAE. Full disclosure, Linda, I had to Google where the UAE was because I knew it was in the Middle East. I just had no idea where it was. So when you get this call, and it's safe to say anyone listening to this knows that you're the smarter person on this conversation. So you probably knew where the UAE was. But when you got that call about building a common law system there, were you like, wait, what?
Joe, I was completely I wondered if it was a joke. I wondered if somebody was pulling my leg. I really did. I was like, a what? A common law system where? I had been to Dubai for 2 days in transit. When we left New York, we traveled to return to Australia. We traveled for 3 months around the world with our small children at the time. And so our last port of call was Dubai for a couple of days to break up the flight and have one sort of last adventure. Other than that, I had never traveled to the Middle East before, had really not known much about the Middle East or anybody, knew nobody who lived in the Middle East. So, you know, it was like, okay, well, how could I say no to that? How could I say no to something that is really a once in a lifetime opportunity? It's just, to me, it was unthinkable. No, just simply wasn't an option. So, yeah, it was exciting. After I got over the, you're kidding me, right? I got to the, well, that's extraordinary and that's exciting and I got to take that.
Wow. And I'm curious, without getting too personal, was it helpful to you that your children were grown and you had already kind of lived a pretty excellent life? They were like, hey, I could take this risk. Was the context of where you were in your life helpful in making that decision a little easier?
It was. There was a bit of shock from my children at the time. I can't say that it was an easy road in relation to, you know, telling them that that's what I wanted to do. But I'm blessed with children who understand that I'm a worker and I enjoy a professional career and I find it makes me well-rounded. It's just a personal thing. And so, you know, after the kind of immediate, like, so you're leaving, and how does that all work? And you know,
how does that affect me, Mom? You're leaving. Tell me about me. How is this going to affect what's going on in my life? Is that sort of how the conversations were going?
Essentially, yeah. Essentially, after the, you know, and bless my son, he was like, "Hang on a minute, you're not taking the dog right." So you know, once we worked out that our fabulous Wiley the yellow Labrador was staying at home, well, once one of us was like, all right, okay, well then that's fine then, you know. So so for him, I think that was around about 70% of the issue was whether or not our dog was staying or not. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, but you know, it was. I'm not going to say it was easy at the start. It was difficult at ensuring. You know, late teenagers have ups and downs, and to be there when you need it and make sure you're in touch. Not easy. Sometimes extremely difficult and extremely nerve-wracking, and a few trips back and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, I think all of us realized that a really content, happier, or more content and happier household is when everybody's doing what they really want to do rather than what they feel like they're entirely obligated to do without any regard to, you know, the subjective person. So, but I think I was lucky. I had a supportive husband and two children who really understood the reason why. And then we kind of, you know, we made it work. And now, you know, they're much older now. And so a trip to the Middle East a couple of times a year, at least it was pre-COVID, and we'll start again, or to nice destinations around here, you know, has become really part of the norm and fun, you know, a fun part of our lives.
That's awesome. And we talked about what you actually did with the court system there at in the UAE, but what's it like working there? Because from what I understand, you have what's called a golden visa, which allows like the executives to spend like, you know, up to a decade there on a visa. So what's it like as an Aussie person working in the middle of the Middle East? I mean, is it the same? Is it different? Like, what's it like?
Joe, I think to sort of set the scene on that is that the UAE is 80% expat population and 20% of locals. So you're very much surrounded with expats, and there are currently, I think the statistic from the Australian ambassador is there are currently 16,000 Australians working in the UAE, quite a number of Americans as well. And it's an extraordinary place in terms of the diversity of the of people, of, you know, cultures who work here. I mean, the number of nationalities, I can't remember the statistics, but it's numerous, and it makes it incredibly interesting just to be working with this great diversity of people from different walks of life, different countries. Of course, it's not the same, but you are sort of surrounded with a lot of people, you know, either Australians or Brits, Americans, Canadians, whatever. So you kind of, and it's English speaking mostly, as in, of course, it's Arabic is the national language. But I don't, my Arabic is very poor, sadly. I regret to say that after 7 years. But you, I think, you know, it is all English spoken mostly. And so you don't have that difficulty, if you like, of settling into the community when you first arrive by struggling with the language. But it is a very welcoming country. It is a very good lifestyle here. Its progressive nature is extraordinary. You know, I do the most incredibly interesting things here. There's not a lot that you can't do in terms of, you know, activities, and that is increasing as the country really is opening up its borders for people to stay, for people to come and live here. So I was recently fortunate to be given a 10-year visa. The 10-year visa, golden visas, are relatively new. So, yeah, and, you know, that's it's terrific to have that. It really makes you settle in. So I'm completely settled here. And, yeah, the lifestyle is terrific. And the breadth of work from a professional perspective in the law, the types of cases that I see and talking to the lawyers here, it really is extraordinary in terms of great complexity, great interest, great cross-border involvement. So you can really do some cutting-edge things here in professional careers, and particularly now with the country's great commitment to supporting particularly tech entrepreneurs, but our entrepreneurial communities, really in order to drive more progression, more sort of technology and more innovation in the country.
You know, it's funny, you describe Abu Dhabi sort of like Charleston, South Carolina. I know it sounds very weird, but I relocated to Charleston in 2020 from the New York City area. And one of the things I always joke with is no one's actually from Charleston. There are two kinds of people. They came here for school and stayed, or they came here for a man or woman and stayed. So no one's actually from Charleston. So it's funny that there's all those expats around where you are. Well, did you have any idea that that was a possibility? Or did you think like, oh my God, I'm going to need to learn Arabic, or I'm going to be lost there? But the fact that there were so many expats there, was that sort of like a pleasant surprise? We're like, oh, that's cool that I have folks that grew up like me that are all around me.
Yeah, I knew that there were a lot of expats here beforehand, like as I'd sort of started to do a lot of research. I mean, it sounds like I sort of got the call and just left, but I did do a lot of talking to people, and I was given the opportunity to talk to a lot of people here to say, look, you know, don't take it from us, but go and talk to these people about the life that they enjoy. And really the sort of the mantra here from a number of people is, I came for three and I've been here for 13 years, or I've been here for 23 years. people just settle here into the life. It's such an hospitable place to live. I love it. I really do. I just enjoy it immensely because it's really so easy to settle into. I live by the beach, which are these emerald waters, which, you know, at the right times of the year, the dolphins come swimming along and there's the turtle population and all sorts of things. So, you know, and it's near the Louvre, which is being built. The Guggenheim is close to being, you know, is in construction now, and really various things. So it's a very easy place to live. And having professional and career opportunities with it is really, just rounds it all off. So, I love it. I really do. It's been a fantastic move for me.
Well, if the court thing doesn't work out, I'm sure there's probably a position for the UAE Board of Tourism because you're doing a great job of selling the country for fellow travelers. So that's pretty cool.
No, well, there you go. Maybe I'll keep that in mind, though. If, you know, for some reason, the court, I think I'm done with the court. I'll branch out and go and talk to the Department of Tourism and see how I go.
Lastly, Linda, I want to talk about a part of your book where you talk about push and pull and overthinking. And I think as human beings, I think we've gotten worse at this because I think now we have more data and more information at our fingertips than ever before. So it's really, really easy to overthink every decision. And I'm sure like in all decisions you made, you probably fell in that trap as well. How can we get out of this box of overthinking every single decision we make and letting us make these big, bold choices that you've made in your life? Do you have any advice for folks who just can't get out of their own way?
When I start to realize, and I do constantly, get into the overthinking mode, a wonderful mentor of me once told me to write down on a piece of paper the push and the pull. Like one side's the push, one side's the pull. And then he said, so that's out of your system now, right? You've written all that down now, right? You've taken it out of your head. You've written it down. So just leave that there. And now what is your heart and gut telling you? And then go with that. Because you've written that all down. And at the end of that, somewhere, you've kind of got to settle. And that whole overthinking it is never going to sort it. But from within, you have a sense why it's pulling you to it and why you're stepping back. And so it's your gut, I think. It's your gut and your heart. So I think stop your mind, because that is just trained to, you know, that is just, you know, it's like your heartbeat. It's just constantly thinking. And so if you can quiet and just to listen to your gut, I think that is where your best decisions are made.
Linda Fitzallen is her name. Linda, do you have a title for the book yet? Because I know you're in the early going, but do you have one that you have in mind or you're thinking about?
No, not yet, Joe. There's, you know, quite a few things rattling around in my overthinking mind with the title of the book.
Not yet. Write a list that says push on one side and pull on the other, and then see what comes of that. I will say the title is probably sometimes the hardest part with all the authors we talk to, because, you know, I would say 50% come in, this is what I want to name my book, and then 50% is like, I have no idea, and then have to wait till like the last moment to come up with a title. So I get why it can be a bit of a struggle.
I'm hoping, I don't know whether or not this is a vain hope, that by the time I get to the end of it, inevitably there's inspiration there and go, aha, I have that aha moment.
Sure.
Oh, that's the name of the book. I don't know if that's horrendous optimism, to which at the end I'm going to be miserably disappointed and then go back into the overthinking. But at the moment I feel like at the end of writing it, I feel like it will stand out as to be kind of the inevitable choice.
Wonderful. Well, Linda, thank you so much for the time. Thank you for sharing your story. Looking forward to how the book comes out and with that eventual title that you come up with. But it's going to be a great story. And thank you very much for taking the time to give us a little sample of it this morning.
Oh, Joe, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that's it for this episode of the Forbes Books Podcast. If you enjoy the show, make sure you take a second to subscribe so you automatically get new shows when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I would love
If you left us a review so more amazing entrepreneurs like yourself can discover the show. And please don't forget the golden rule and treat others as you want to be treated. Thanks for listening. Until next time, adios.